Ton say hello and welcome. You're listening to the voices of our people on the Wind Speaker Radio Network. I'm Daniel Barker Tremblay, and it's Seagatsoon. On today's show, I continue my conversation with Buffalo Lake Métis Settlement's own Wally Desjarlais. I have to ask, out of all of the interviews that you've done, from all the people that you've met under the sun, what would you say your top three favorites are for interviewing, besides Brett Kissel and many others? Because I know that, at some point, I spoke to my cousin Kyle, and he said, I got on with Wally before, and we had a Desjarlais inception. I said, fair enough. So I figured, hey, what would be some of the coolest interviews that you've had where you're like, that person's coming in today? Like, I'm going to be in the same room as that individual? That's insane. What is my life? This is my office for today.
You know what? When it comes to that, the first three that come to mind, the first one, Susan Glukark.
Wow.
Buffy St. Marie. And my third one, I would say, would be Charlie Pride.
Wow.
And that's just, Susan Glukark was coming in to promote her new CD at the time, and I was the one that was going to be doing the interview, and I was just, shaking, I needed to be medicated. I calmed myself down. But, once we sat down and we talked a little before we went on the interview, again, you got to realize they're just human beings like we are. Mm-hmm. And they're doing the same thing. They're getting out there, promoting their material, and they work hard. They work really hard to even land a radio interview. Mm-hmm. Because you got to realize how hard these artists work and the amount of interviews that they do. And I've always enjoyed it. There's not been one that I've not been disappointed with. Well, there was one. And it was, I was doing it recorded, right? Mm-hmm. And was going to play it on air later. Mel Tillis.
No way.
And here's why. I forgot to hit record.
Oh, that's one of my biggest fears. Holy. Woo! That's oh my goodness.
So that was between him and I.
that's fair. Holy smokes. For me, I would say the Bret Hart has to be number one for me, hands down. That'll always be number one for me. Being at the Junos and stuff, that was pretty cool. But the coolest, the second one was probably Carlos from YTV. I grew up watching him. I was like, I remember stuff happened with Avril Lavigne on stage, and everyone backstage was freaking out, oh my goodness, there's a streaker on stage, blah, blah, blah. And I remember just watching all the Junos and the Cars people just freaking out. And yeah. Then all of a sudden, we're watching this on the TVs in the back, and all of a sudden, I hear this voice come up to me and go, what happened? And I looked at the person, who I didn't know was Carlos at the time. I was like, you didn't see what happened? But about just like normal, right? And I looked back at the TV, and I was laughing. I was talking to one of the photographers, and I'm like, wait a minute. And I look, and there he is, just sitting there, just standing there, eating a sandwich. And I'm like, no way. And I'm like, I'm just trying to muster up the energy to ask the question, not to look weird. But I was like, hey, I have a question. He goes, yeah, what's up? I was like, are you Carlos from YTV? And he goes, yeah, man. I was like, oh my days. That's insane. That's awesome. So we took a selfie because I knew no one would have believed me. And I was like, we chatted for a good 20 minutes. And he was like, what got you into the industry? I know he's working with ET tonight. And that was pretty cool. I was like, another cool moment. But And of course, I remember doing the first ever Indigenous Day celebration, getting the jerseys, meeting, some of the Cree speakers and stuff, which was phenomenal. And I was nervous too, because I didn't know Fawn worked with us for the Cree Chatter Hour. And when I had her on for Voices, I was nervous as a Nancy, man. I was nervous nanny, man. I was like, no way. I was like, she's going to come here and go, start singing the number one song that she's ever released. Well, many of that she's ever released, Remember Me. I literally thought I was going to get bannock slapped by by her, and all of a sudden I'm at a funeral, and that's her song playing in the background, you know. In the sun comes up in the morning sky. It's just like, I was like, but meeting her, she was so, like, she was awesome. And, like, this job just never fails to deliver on, you know, the phenomenon of, you never know what your office is going to be the day that you're going to go out and do something. And, you know, I know that the company has grown vastly since your time. And of course, you know, have you yourself, have you seen an uprise of interest from indigenous, both men and women, two-spirited, that want to get into this industry? Because I've been asked, like, you know, how can we inspire those to get into this industry? Like you mentioned before, you wanted to give out, you gave out your numbers, say, come out, reach out to me, and we should be using this company as a platform to help bring that out. What do you have any ideas as to how we could do that?
Well, you know what? Here's something that I'm going to tell you. You said, you know, the young people, two-spirited people. I'm two-spirited myself.
Mm.
And I think this is the first time that it's going to be getting out there to our listeners. But it's something, it's how I was born. It was how I was raised. Mm. It was just something that you had to sweep under the rug at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a hard time with that growing up. But with today and the acceptance of LGBTQ people, is the doors have opened tremendously since the time that I came out to my mother.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I was going to be kicked out because I from what I heard from my grandmother, those people are going to hell. Those people. And I thought, how am I going to tell this to my mom? So I came right out and told her, and she was fine with it. Mothers know.
That's fair, yeah.
Mothers know. And, like, I don't go out there and, you know, say, this is who I am. No. I'm Waleed Ejerle. I'm a Métis man, Canadian, who also lives in Buffalo Lake, Alberta.
Tough way.
That's who I am. I mean, really, the other has nothing to play with it. I mean, why should that interfere with my work? And that's with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they're two-spirited or not. I mean, the work should come first.
And that's just it. And honestly, you know, as you mentioned many times over throughout this chat, it's in your cloth, it's in your fiber, it's your being, and it's, of course, it makes you who you are. And if you're not yourself, you can only be yourself because no one else could be you, right? You got to be you. That's what makes you unique. That's what makes you stand out. And that's what makes you more connected to many of the listeners that you've done and communicated with over the years. And before I let you go, we're going to wrap things up here, Wally. I always ask this to everyone that I've interviewed for this show, because Voices of Our People, it's a very connected show, and we like to connect with the listeners as well. So I would have to ask you, if there's one thing that you would like to say from, you know, your connection with the communities across the province of Alberta, what would you like to say to them, for them taking all the years of joining you every morning or every request show, and even on your show now, that, you know, the show that you have going on weekends, what would you like to say to them?
I want to say thank you, first and foremost, to CFWE for having me all these years, and then me coming back and doing these weekend programs. I mean, it just gives me that opportunity again to just reach out and to say hello to those listeners, although I never get to chat with them. But thank you for being, you know, for following, for following me and listening to me throughout these years, because if it weren't for them, and if it weren't for you, the listener, and you know who you are, because there are a lot of them that I could just name off by heart and go on for probably like the whole day just naming off the people that I've been able to meet. But thank you. Thank you for reaching out, sharing your stories, and, you know, being able to tell their stories to me, because, you know, all along I've been, you know, doing my job and not realizing that I was also telling stories of myself. And that's how radio should be. I mean, and how radio is you need to connect with your audience. You need to know your listeners.
Mm. And that's just the most important thing of all, because we're just humans. We're not, you know, big celebrities, and we got to learn how to communicate and connect with the community. That's the most important thing. Well, I just want to say hi, I'm Scott Tenanoa. Thank you so much, Wally Desjarlais, for taking the time with me here on the Voices of Our People on the Windspeaker Radio Network. Hi, and once again, huge honor to speak with you here today.
Well, thank you so much, Daniel, and it's much appreciated. I thank you for that.
That was Wally Desjarlais from Buffalo Lake Métis Settlement. You're listening to the Voices of Our People on the Windspeaker Radio Network. I'm Daniel Barker-Tremblay. Next, I sit down and chat with Stacey Wolfden from Calgary, Alberta. Can you talk a little bit about your family roots in the Lake of Two Mountains, Ontario, and also connecting within the province of Alberta?
Oh, yeah, sure. I grew up in Ontario. I'm originally from Lake of Two Mountains, which is by the Genesitage Reserve in Ontario. So I'm from the Iroquois Confederacy. I'm Mohawk. My mom was Mohawk. My grandma was Mohawk. I don't know. So I'll give you a little context. I grew up in the 60s. I was born in 1964. So back then it was a little bit harder to be Indigenous than it is today. So we were poor. My family was poor. My cooking and mushroom, we had a garden, and we did a lot of, like, I guess we lived off the land. They hunted and fished, you know, for food. We lived fairly remote. I don't want to say we lived way in the bush, but we lived fairly remote. But there was always sustainable ability around, you know, we could hunt and fish. There were moose and deer, and, you know, so our family never went hungry. And so my mission one year got an idea. He met up with a man who was from the United States who was hunting in Ontario, and they decided to start doing guiding tours. So they would take hunters from the United States and Canada all around in the fall, and they would take them hunting. And they would bring them back, and when they were done with camp, they would bring them back, and my cook would cook them a really good meal. And they would just generously hand over hides and furs and anything they had done, but mostly hides, you know, unprocessed hides, so we could tan them at home, right? So that's where most of our stuff came from, other than what we hunted and fished, like, for our family over the winter and during the seasons. So that's where I learned all my skills. I learned how to bait and sew and tan hide and work with furs, you know, from growing up in my family, from the upbringing of my family. And
in those times too, right, you know, differentiating from nowadays where you delved right into not only the culture and the traditions, but the language as well. Can you talk a little bit about the importance of that, especially in today's times for the newer generations?
Like, Yeah, like the language around like how different it is now compared to then.
No, like how what you did at your age back in the day compared to the newer generations now. Can you talk about the importance of getting involved within the culture and the language and the traditions?
Oh my gosh, yeah. That's intrinsically who we are as people. Like, you know, I want to say, Daniel, you know words like land back? You know when we use all those phrases, land back, you know, stuff like that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a little bit more than a catchphrase to me. It's a little bit more than a hashtag to me. Because what's important for our youth to really understand and to really know is that's where we intrinsically start. Our stories are from the land. Like, we are people from the land who lived off the land at one time, you know, in the past. You know, we lived a sustainable lifestyle. We hunted and fished the animals that were in our territories, and we used every part of those animals. And what's important is for people, for our youth, to get that connection to who they are and really understand, like, even the territories that they live in, you know, and the animals that are there, because it all ties in to saving our environment and taking care of our environment. Not so much, you know, standing out and maybe protesting, but being aware of our environment and all the things that are happening around us now. Like, you know, you see the wildfires in Kelowna, and you see all the wildfires that are happening in Maui and stuff and around the world. But and you see the devastation to human life, but you don't see the devastation to the wildlife. They don't talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
And we lose stuff like, and those are the things that we lose. And when we lose them, sometimes they don't recover, you know. And especially, you know, like, I want to talk about when the youth get connected back to their culture and they get connected to using these natural materials again, they understand a little bit how our ancestors did it.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and the materials that they used.
And of course, you know, with that as well, to touch on that, you know, you've delved into the world of, you know, creating art and incorporating, you know, the indigenous culture within that as well. When did you know that you wanted to pursue the world of art and to show your creations as well in the way that you have back in 2016 when you started Wolf Den Designs? Can you talk about the inspiration behind that business and the inspiration behind what made you into the artist today?
Yeah. Well, I'll always say, Daniel, that it takes a village to make an artist.
Mm.
And, you know, and it really does. Because it started with Calgary Arts Development. Actually, it really started with Authentic of Indigenous. It started with Maureen Autumn and Autumn Eagle Speaker. Maureen had been doing her Native Diva creations for a while, and she kept saying to me, Stacey, you really need, like, you got something here with your raised beadwork. Like, you really need to start doing it and, like, getting it out there. And I kept putting it off because I didn't think anybody would ever like it, or I don't know. I had all these kind of anxieties and fears about it, right? And I would be like, who would be interested in stuff that I do, you know? But I started doing it, and I started putting it out there, and I went to the very first Authentically Indigenous show, and people really liked it and thought it was very unique and different. And that's what started me pursuing it to the degree that I'm doing it now. I just kept refining my art and going back to, I refer a lot to our historical work. I refer a lot to the work that I did when I was younger. You know, the preparing of furs, you know, and smoked hide when I'm doing like, for instance, the winter collection that I'm doing is all smoked hide and furs, and it's, you know, I design it from the very beginning to the end. I start out with drawings. I hand draw all my designs in a design book, and then I go from there. I pick the materials. This collection has smoked hide in it, so I make all the patterns for the gauntlets and for the gloves, and I cut them out, and then I sew them, and I beadwork on them, and then I prepare the furs. This collection has blue fox fur around it, so I prepare all the furs in this very same way that my cook and taught me how to do it, and how her cook and taught her how to do it. So it's kind of a generational thing, I want to say.
And of course, you know, with that generational, you know, connection there as well, you know, and that is very important, because you have to learn how to pass it on to the generations and for it to flourish. As I was told by Wade Jackson, who is an elder here within the city of Edmonton, you know, that's how the culture, the language, the teachings, that's how it survives, and it has to be carried over to the next generation. And it's that's our buffalo today. And of course, you know, can you talk about your involvement with the Indigenous Arts Collective of Canada and how that all started as well?
Yep. So it was back before, around the same year as 2016, I think it was 2019, when I came across the Indigenous Artists Collective of Canada, and it was started by Don Hill, who was from Six Nations, which is a sister reserve of where I'm from. So we're from the same confederacy, and we're both Mohawk, and she started the Indigenous Artists Collective of Canada because she wanted to preserve and conserve these very old art forms. She calls them very old and historical art forms that are not done very often. I think there's a resurgence, though, because I see a lot of people doing it. More so now than I have. And I joined that collective because I really believed in that mandate, because I really do want to preserve and conserve these art forms. Like, you know, being able to cut fur properly, to be able to sew it on properly to a glove, you know, is an art form in itself. And you're right, because these art forms, you have to be there to show somebody how to do it hands-on. It's kind of hard to describe in words. You have to see it to know how to do it. Right, and be showing that. And that's the beauty of our culture, too, is because that's how generations upon generations learn these skills, and these skills are preserved, you know. And now they're preserved in a very beautiful collective that has over 700-plus artists now, I believe, that do all kinds of different traditional art forms, from working with furs to, you know, working with smoked hide, to working with antler, you know, in all different forms of carving and cutting and, you know, and stuff. They do birch bark biting, which is a really old ancient art form where ladies actually fold up small pieces of birch bark and they bite it in a pattern, and they unfold it, and it's just beautiful. But it's very intricate, you know, and they do that. So that's why I joined the Artist Collective, Indigenous Art Canada, because I feel it's very important for our next generations to learn and have these skills available to them, or have that knowledge available to them on a larger platform.
And of course, you know, with that, can you also talk about your works that were also featured in the ATB Arts and Culture and in the making of Treaty 7 Cultural Societies, along with some of the artwork that you love to display, like some of your favorite pieces?
Yeah, I can. Just recently, so I became a member of the Making Treaty 7 Cultural Society Collective of Artists. I had submitted some work to their Artist of the Month, And I was chosen as their October Artist of the Month. And just recently we had a exhibition down at ATB Arts and Culture down on Stephen Avenue for a whole month. It was up for the month of July. And I had some of my longer waist, long earrings with smoke tied in there that I had beaded on. And I had a choker that I had made. It was made for the Calgary Stampede. We had got some tickets from the Mod Squad Cafe from Calgary Arts Development, and I made a smoke tie choker, and that was on display for a whole month down at ATB Arts and Culture. And it was great. It got really rave reviews, and everybody, you know, always loves my work. They're always interested in how the process and how I go through the process of how I make my work.
That was Stacey Wolfden from Calgary, Alberta on Voices of Our People. I'd like to thank today's special guests for joining us, Wally Desjarlais and Stacey Wolfden. Tune in next Thursday for more Voices of Our People on the Windspeaker Radio Network.